Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Auto, home, life, business, whatever your insurance needs may be, they'll take care of it. They'll find you the right insurance, the best price. Some insurance, you can go over state lines to get. They'll do it. They'll find it. And if there's ever a claim, they will go to work as if it happened to them because customer service means everything to them. That is Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Talk about the best in the business. All right, R.J. Anderson in a moment. First, our play-by-play call of the day. The Kansas City Chiefs score late to beat the Detroit Lions.
Wiley, Irving, Ryder up front along with Schwartz. Kelce tucked in there off the right hip. Handoff, Darrell Williams trying to dive. Touchdown, Kansas City! Darrell Williams gets barely into the end zone with 20 seconds left in the game to put the Chiefs up 33-30.
On a day where Patrick Mahomes did not throw a touchdown pass, Kansas City wins and beats Detroit and stays unbeaten. With that now, we turn our attention to baseball, and R.J. Anderson joins us. R.J., welcome back to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Great being here. Thank you for having me.
All right, let's start with Clint Hurdle out as the manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates after 9 years. In the end, I mean, what does him in but doesn't do in Neil Huntington?
Yeah, I mean, it was a very interesting situation, right? Because just a few days ago, Hurdle came out and said that he had been told by the organization that he was coming back for 2020. Certainly had more time remaining on his contract. But after you look at what happened this season, not just record-wise, but also multiple clubhouse fights and one involving a coach, and also, you know, the Felipe Vasquez situation, you can't really put that on Hurdle or anybody in the organization, but it was just the headache of a year for the Pirates. So I think they had to make some change, and you know, Huntington probably kind of had his hands tied. I think ownership probably said, look, it's him or it's both of you. So, you know, I don't think Huntington's, I think his seat's also warm. I don't think he has, you know, the safest situation in the league anymore either. So he might get one, maybe two more years if he really starts to show progress. But I do think that this is a Pirates organization that sooner than later can really undergo another huge transformation from the top on down.
Because this is how I liken the Clint Hurdle situation. It's like being the person that is at home. You need to repair something on the weekend. There is no question you need a Phillips head screwdriver to do it, and all you have is a straight edge. And I just think that he went out there and that those are, I mean, his toolbox was limited.
Yeah, I think that's fair. You know, the Pirates, like we said, they're transitioning, and maybe they need someone who's a little younger, a little bit more able to help, you know, some of these players reach their full potential player development-wise, and maybe Hurdle is just better with veterans. And you might say the same about Ray Sarage. I mean, he's obviously had a great run in Pittsburgh, but for whatever reason, you know, his stuff tended to work better on, you know, journeyman types rather than the younger pitchers coming through the system. And, you know, Pirates fans who are listening don't mean me to mention, you know, Gerrit Cole and some of the ever success stories who have went elsewhere and really saw their stocks improve. But you have a situation there right now with Mitch Keller where the guy came up and, I mean, he just really didn't look like the guy who has been advertised as being, you know, a top prospect, a potential front of the rotation starter. And at some point you have to ask, you know, what is it about the Pirates where they can draft and seemingly develop these guys on the minor league level, but once they get to the majors, they just can't produce up to their stock.
The interesting free agent in all of this is Joe Maddon. Where are some potential landing spots for Joe Maddon, RJ, in your mind?
Yeah, so the one that's, you know, really gained popularity within the industry is the Los Angeles Angels job. And, of course, until this afternoon, they already had a manager in place in Brad Ausmus. And now Ausmus has been fired. So it does seem like that is the likeliest landing spot now. if for whatever reason that falls through, you can talk about maybe the San Diego Padres. You can talk about maybe the Philadelphia Phillies. I mean, Madden is from Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He would make a lot of sense to come in there and, you know, deal with the high expectations, deal with Bryce Harper and the other star players there. And, you know, I think those are probably the three likeliest, you know, for fun and the dark humor sense at least. It'd be kind of amusing if he were to go to the White Sox and replace Rick Renteria again. But right now it does seem like the Angels will be the next landing spot for Joe Madden.
How do you view the season? If the season had gigantic home run numbers, and for the, 12th, 13th consecutive year, every year since 2008, there's been a new record set for total strikeouts in the season. So how did you view the season, RJ?
Well, it's just the continuation of this metamorphosis of baseball. We're at this point where, you know, pitchers are so good at what they do, and they throw harder, and they lean more on their breaking stuff. And so the strikeout numbers have went through the ceiling, and part of those strikeout numbers are the fact that batters are more inclined now to swing for the fences at all count. I mean, it used to be when you get to two strikes, you were going to shorten up, you were going to try to go the other way, you know, go with the pitch, what have you. Nowadays, teams have basically decided that, you know what, there's no sense in looking for a single when we can swing for the fences. And it's like a three-point shot versus a mid-range jumper in basketball. You know, if you look at the points per shot, well, you should always take the three-pointer. Whereas in baseball, if you look at, say, the runs per swing or, you know, the production per swing, you should always swing for the home run ball. So, you know, there's kind of this real interplay between the quality of stuff and how do you push back against that if you're a hitter. And, yeah, it's to swing hard and hope that you make contact. So I know it's not for everyone, but I think that baseball actually has bigger issues going on than just the style of play. And I think that there are a lot of economic factors that we should be cognizant of. And, I mean, just today it was released that baseball had its attendance go down for the first time in 16 years. And I think part of it is because they're appealing more and more to the upper-class fan and kind of leaving, you know, the average American, you know, the average fan out on the outside because they can't afford tickets. They can't bring their children to the game. So I think that we really need to be cognizant of that in addition to what's happening on the field with the home runs and the strikeouts and the pace of play.
You mentioned pace of play. The average time of a game this year was 3 hours, 5 minutes, and 35 seconds. In 2005, just a mere 14 years ago, 2005 isn't that long ago, the average time of the game was 2:46. Is it because of all the relief changes, or is there something else that's causing games to be, 19 minutes doesn't seem long unless you're sitting there?
Absolutely, and I think there's a combination, again, at play here, and one of the things is that because pitchers are throwing so much harder, they take more time in between pitches, and this has actually been studied out there that, you know, that's part of the reason it seems like these guys are throwing harder is because they take longer and their bodies have slightly longer to recuperate. And in addition to that, you can talk about all the relief changes. You can talk about also, you know, the swing changes we talked about. Okay, you know, think about it. If batters are looking to drive the ball, that means they're probably taking more pitches. It means they're also probably whiffing more often when they swing, which leads to more overall pitches. So I think that there's a combination right there of those three things that are contributing to that 19 minutes. And it's going to get worse most likely in the postseason when you see teams lean even more on their bullpens than they do during the regular season.
All right. You talked about the affordability of baseball. A lot of baseball is different than, for example, the NFL and the NBA. They get so much national money from TV. Baseball relies a lot on regional TV network money. What can baseball do to appeal to the younger fan, the middle-aged fan? What can they do price structure-wise? If they were to sit down and say, RJ, what would you do with the fan to overcome some of these problems, to make it more attractive for them to say, yeah, I'm going to spend money on it, and how much should they roll back prices?
Well, keep in mind, you know, the economic structure of baseball has changed now where they are far less dependent on gate prices, you know, or gate revenue, I should say. And they're more dependent on that television money, as you said. So in theory, you know, they kind of have a little bit of a house money situation with how they structure their ticket prices. And, you know, if you've seen some teams like the Orioles, for instance, where they actually make it free for kids to attend games. And I think that that would be a very wise decision for more teams to co-opt because, bring your kids to the ballpark, you know, you're basically growing young fans, right? And you're doing it without being cost prohibitive to families. So I think that that would be a wise thing. And frankly, you know, it's kind of funny that we're talking about this today because the Boston Red Sox have been outright saying they won't be able to bring back Mookie Betts and J.D. Martinez next year, and today they raised their average ticket prices again. So it's just like, you know, they're talking out both ends of their mouth here. They talk about they don't have enough money to keep their star players. Well, at the same time, they're wanting to charge you more to come see the product. And that's the Boston Red Sox we're crying out loud. You know, that's not the Pittsburgh Pirates or the Tampa Bay Rays. That is one of the richest and most marketable brands in all professional sports. So I think, you know, put the emphasis on getting kids in the ballpark, put the emphasis on allowing families to come to the ballpark at a reasonable cost, and, you know, keep in mind that you don't have to try to eke out and milk out every last dime. It's going to be okay if you're only making, you know, I don't know, 15 million or billion or whatever in revenue instead of, you know, 16. You know what I mean? I think they really need to keep that in perspective, but I know that they're not going to, because that's not why these guys are owning sports teams in the first place.
Right. It would, believe me, John Henry is the money. You and I both know that.
Absolutely.
All right, let's get to the playoff part of it. When it gets to this time, last year you mentioned the Red Sox, when they won, they were using their starters left and right out of the bullpen. All five at one point or another were throwing bullpen innings, especially the later it got in the postseason. How do you look at the bullpens of the 10 teams still remaining in the playoffs? Who has the best one, and who has the one that, if you were managing, would scare you to death?
Well, I think you have to start with the Yankees. You know, that's just a loaded bullpen. They kind of built for this moment. I think you're going to see them take advantage of that during the postseason, and it wouldn't surprise me even if the Yankees decide to use the opener strategy or go to a bullpen game. You know, they have really, they've basically assembled their roster with an eye on this, and same with Milwaukee to some extent. In terms of the bullpen that I would consider the shakiest, I think I would go with the Braves. You know, I really like Chris Martin. I thought that was a savvy acquisition, but, you know, there's just something about the rest of those pitchers that it kind of scares me a little bit. You know, nothing against Luke Jackson, nothing against Shane Green and so on and so forth, but if I were ranking them, I think I would probably have them at the bottom, and I don't know, that could end up being, you know, the fatal flaw for the Braves as they get into this playoff.
All right, of the wild card teams, the four wild card teams, which one has the potential to be a Kansas City or San Francisco that actually can weed its way through the next series if they won?
You know, it's tough because I want to say the Nationals. I think they are the best team of all four wildcard teams. They have the second best run differential among any National League team. And you look at that rotation and the chance of throwing out Max Scherzer, Steven Strasburg, and Patrick Corbin, and even Anibal Sanchez. And I mean, that's a very tough 1-2-3 combination to beat, but at the same time, they'd be going up against the Dodgers, who seem like, if not the best team in baseball, at least the best team in the National League. So I do think I'll take the Nationals for the reasons I mentioned, but, you know, it's going to be tough for either of those teams to overcome the Dodgers, even with whoever wins tomorrow night. And in the American League, you know, nothing against the Rays or the A's, but I just see them both as being clearly a level below either the Yankees or Astros. So it's going to be very difficult for them, not only to get through the ALDS, but also to get through the ALCS afterward.
Right. Yeah, no question about it. Now, everyone talks about the Astros, that 1-2-3 punch in the rotation. Gerrit Cole, now a 20-game winner. Verlander, I think Verlander was fourth in the majors in strikeouts on non-fastballs. And then there's Zach Greinke. See, I read up on stuff, RJ.
I believe it.
So, yeah, I mean, and Zach Greinke, when you look, even in today's bullpen-heavy world, what does that starting rotation mean or maybe not mean?
Well, it means they should be in every game, right? I mean, those three are monsters, and it kind of goes back to what I just said about the Nationals with Scherzer, Corbin, and Strasburg. I mean, you have those horses, and it really kind of changes how you manage day-to-day, not only during the regular season, but also the postseason, because, you know, if you have Verlander and Cole, you can say, all right, well, we can be a little bit more aggressive of a bullpen, when it's Wade Miley's turn in the rotation. Or you can forego Wade Miley's turn in the rotation, and you can just throw a bullpen day if you really wanted to. And so, you know, I know we're in the bullpen era. I know that teams are going to lean heavily on that this year. I mean, it's going to begin tomorrow night even. I fully expect the Milwaukee Brewers to make at least four or five pitching changes before it's all said and done. But,
in the,
you know,
first
there's still
inning,
something very attractive about having those three or four big starters at the front of your rotation.
Yeah. In fact, they may make four or five changes in the first inning. Just having a little fun here. The Dodgers, they go in as heavy favorites in a lot of ways, especially in the National League. But their bullpen has been shaky, and their defense has not been great. So they're not a perfect team, but what makes them is the starting pitching and the offense good enough to overcome that, in your opinion, in a short series?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if you look at the rotation, they're probably going to throw some combination of Ryu, Buehler, and Kershaw, and that's pretty good on its own. And that lineup is deep. I mean, they brought up some guys late in the year, and Gavin Lux and Will Smith, and even on the pitching side, Dustin May. And, you know, these guys aren't necessarily household names at this point, but they will be soon. And, you know, you look at that lineup, it's just impossible to pitch to, really. And you mentioned their bullpen, and it's a fair point, you know. If there is one Achilles heel here, it might be the bullpen. But at the same time, they're going to shift one of those young arms, maybe two of those young arms, to the bullpen, and it could look entirely different versus how it looked for most of the regular season. So not a perfect team, but the best team in the National League. And, you know, if you're betting on one of those National League teams to win the World Series, they should be your favorite.
All right, so when we get to the end of October, which two teams are standing there, in your opinion? This is always fun when we take out the dartboard.
Yeah, I think I picked the Yankees and Dodgers, and, you know, you could easily say Astros and Dodgers, and that makes a lot of sense to me. I just think that the Yankees are going to find a way to really leverage that bullpen, and it's hard to beat that lineup. And I think that the rotation might be a little underrated, especially if Luis Severino stays hardy and hale and can go out there and do what he does. So, you know, any one of those three teams is probably the team that everyone's going to be picking to win the World Series. And outside of those three teams, you're not going to see too many ever picks. But I think there's a reason for that. Those three teams were clearly the best teams during the regular season.
And there's one more team I got to bring up. The Twins won. Did the Twins won 101 or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So
they
won 101, which amazes everybody. Do they have a puncher's chance?
I mean, it just depends because, you know, they can obviously hit the long ball like anyone or more than anyone else in the majors. But at the same time, you know, that rotation's been kind of up and down. And, you know, they lost Kyle Gibson to injury for a while. Jake Odorizzi left to start recently with his own injury. I know he's supposed to be fine, but I don't know. I just don't see them beating either the Astros or the Yankees. I don't see them being both in one postseason. So maybe if they really get hot, but I have a hard time seeing it with that pitching staff.
Darn, puncher's chance.
Puncher's chance, that's fun.
Okay, but the problem is that the puncher's chance works in one game. It doesn't work in a series, so that's the problem.
Yeah,
RJ, yeah, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your insight. It's really great.
Of course, thank you for having me.
All right, RJ Anderson, CBSSports.com. Back with more in a moment, including Dave Cicchini, the Bucknell football coach, in the final half hour as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Purdy Insurance. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you. The other guy's way or the SMC way? The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. So we're at the holiday party last year, and this music started playing. You should have seen this suit.
Oh, it was crazy. Boom, right out of his chair.
Hey,
we were concerned. He was down on the chair for quite a while.
Oh, it was amazing. I mean, it really brought a new definition to working in the room. I never saw anybody work a room sitting in a chair before. Because that was his exact quote to us when we went there. He says, I'm working the room. Like, you're sitting there.
At that point, our work was done.
Our work was done.
Okay. We stepped through the door.
Okay.
Come on.
Okay. Now, for anybody who thinks we're kidding here, we are not. This is one we're not joking about. His exact quote to us was, "I'm working the room. I'm going to work the room." Then he tells us, "I'm working the room," and he was sitting there. I looked over at Sean. I said, "We can't make this stuff up." you can't make it up.
That's the one time where we're with that many clients, we treat them as friends and not clients. I mean, that's the one time they're friends. They're friends all the time, all year long, but that's the one time they're truly friends. And yeah, we'll talk business tomorrow. I'm working the room.
I'm still to this day confused.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay. I mean, honestly, I've asked you this before. Where do we find these people?
We can write a book.
No kidding. You think so? Oh, Dave Cecchini, next half hour. Took the lead on Princeton, battled them, but you know what? I think little by little, they're getting better.
For nearly 100 years, Purdy Insurance has been your locally owned, family-operated source for insurance products. With a staff of over 20 and partnerships with some of the industry's most trusted companies, Purdy has the experience and resources to get the job done. Whether you need personal, home, and auto, or complex business insurance solutions, Purdy will help you navigate through the process. Call today at 570-286-5855, or better yet, stop in their Sunbury office to see what Purdy Insurance can do for you.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Geez, I like when everybody agrees with me. I don't know about you, Sean.
It's a nice change of pace, isn't it?
I kind of like it, really. Yeah, it's I don't think it becomes weird when everybody agrees with me. After all, I'm right. No.
That's where it all starts.
All right. Don't get me started. All right. Today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance. Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. And we're in the Sunbury Motors studio, Sunbury Motors 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And with that, we bring in the head football coach at Bucknell, Dave Cecchini. Dave, welcome. It's great to have you with us.
Thanks. Great to be here.
Dave, you're trying to make steps week by week. So in some ways, obviously the final score isn't going to help you out. But when you sat down and you watched the video, did you see steps in the right direction?
Oh, definitely. I mean, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, you know, this was the healthiest that our offensive line had been for any game this season. We actually had four out of our five projected starters in the game, so we're still not 100%, but getting closer, and that had a huge difference in our offensive production. We were able to open up some holes in the run game and have really for the first time a change in the line of scrimmage for the better on a consistent basis. And then it helped out with our pass protection as well. Logan Bitticoffer, did a great job at quarterback and had time to throw for the most part and had his best day. Not just the best day of the year for the offense, but the best day of his career so far.
Well, and not only that, you talk about how Logan played. What have you seen an improvement in him in the ability to see the field, make a better decision here and there? Because obviously it's something you've talked with him a lot about.
Yes, I have. I think he's getting more comfortable, particularly with our scheme. You know, I think the more reps that he has it, the more time, you know, not just in practice, but under pressure, you know, under the lights on Saturdays, that's helped him. He certainly showed a comfort level that he hadn't had in the prior three games that he participated in. Of course, again, I'll go back to I think he was able to get comfortable as well with the offensive line doing a great job of holding up a fairly good Princeton defense. I mean, these guys were no slouches. I mean, they came in statistically. They'd only given up, their starters hadn't given up a touchdown drive all year. It was just their third teamers that gave up a touchdown to Butler late in the fourth quarter. So there was a lot to be proud of.
What do you like about the work of Dominic Lyles on the outside?
Well, I'd say he's a big kid. He's a big target, and he's a great competitor. He has a lot of talent, and he had a kind of a breakout game against Sacred Heart a couple weeks back, but had a concussion at the end of that game in the second half, and that kept him out of our third contest of the year against Villanova. So we were able to get him back. And he really stepped up and made some clutch receptions, and he's just one of those bigger kids that just is a guy who has this great range about him to stretch the field vertically, to go up and catch passes, out jump some of these smaller corners that we face, particularly in the Patriot League, where the average corner is about a 5'9 or a 5'10, and he's 6'2 and can go up and get the ball. So he can help you in a lot of different ways, and we certainly need to keep him healthy so he can continue becoming the best receiver he can be here over the next 6 or 7 weeks.
You take the lead early, then you give it up, but then you fight back and tie the game. Did you see a resolve that shows the step forwards?
Yeah, definitely. In particular, just the fact that we were able to go out there, stop Princeton on fourth down and two at midfield, which was a huge play, give the ball to the offense with great field position, and then the offense being able to take advantage of that turnover on downs to go down the field and put it in the end zone. That was a huge shot to the morale. I mean, that's really, we've been playing from behind all season long. And to go out there and take the lead early in the first quarter was great. And I think the second thing, as you mentioned, was we gave up a couple of touchdowns, again, to a very talented Princeton offense. And then our offense was able to manufacture an 80-yard drive and go down the field and stick it in the end zone to tie the game. So, it kind of goes back to the first thing you allude to. It's steps in the right direction. Players seeing some positive results on the field, again, against great competition, top 25 caliber teams, and just starting slowly by each week to continue to become a better overall football team. Now, defensively, we did have some issues, and that was certainly
sure.
The second half. We gave up a lot of yards through the air to, again, an incredibly talented quarterback and receiving core. So we still have some things that we have to tweak and things that we have to get better, to help as we head into league play here on Saturday.
You talked about the defensive side of it. Is it, it's easy to look at pass yards and say, okay, secondary. All right, fair enough. But are you getting enough pressure up front to help the secondary?
Not on Saturday. That was the
right.
biggest issue,
Yep.
Again, I'll give Princeton credit. They moved the launch point. The quarterback got rid of the football on time. They were doing things to get rid of the ball quickly, but at times Princeton had far too much time back there to throw the football. Particularly with some of the young, we were playing a couple of freshmen back there in the secondary at times. We were a little banged up. And, against a team that has three, I mean, not just one or two, but three really, really good receivers, we were just stretched to the limit there. And unfortunately, we broke down and gave up some big plays. And, again, it starts with, Princeton's quarterback. He was amazing. I mean, he threw, deep balls with an accuracy that's rarely seen in our level.
You mentioned your level. Two more questions, and one of them deals with on this level. How difficult is it on this level to develop any kind of depth?
Well, in particular in the Patriot League, it's fairly difficult. You're looking with a roster size limitation that has most teams in the Patriot League right now. in the low 80s. Now, you rewind back to the days before the Patriot League started giving scholarships, everybody's roster was closer to 100 or 105, and I think 105 is exactly what Princeton was at, just talking to their head coach before the game. And so what that does is it creates a pressure that you can't miss on recruits. Your players that you're recruiting, they better show up and become the type of player that you projected that they would become. And if they don't, if they turn out to be a guy who performs below expectations, or you know, we usually in football, you know, coaches use that term above or below the line. A guy who can help you win a game is above the line. A guy who can't is a guy that's below the line, a guy that you're hoping you don't put out there. And that has put a lot of pressure within the Patriot League. And typically when you see teams that have great success, like Colgate a year ago with the run that they had, you know, they had a lot of guys that were above the line. Their roster size wasn't necessarily any bigger than Bucknell's or Lehigh's or Lafayette's, but they had guys that were able to go out there. And so if the starter went down, the second team guy was in a step, you know, a big noticeable drop off in production. And that's the challenge that we've had here at Bucknell, and most of the Patriot League has had. You know, right now Colgate's 0-5. Lafayette's 0-4, Lehigh's 1-3, and a lot of that is just you're playing with a couple of kids who just aren't ready to play yet, or we just don't have enough depth to rotate guys out, and it takes its toll on a football team. There's no question about it.
Now the next part is you get to play your conference opener. It's homecoming, and it's the conference opener with Holy Cross. Holy Cross, I just watched a little bit of them play against Syracuse the other day. Needless to say, that didn't go well. The one thing I will say about them is that they are plus, I want to say, 3 or 4 giveaway takeaway, but offensively they've struggled. Have they, when you watch them on video, have those offensive struggles actually been related to the opponent they play? Because they're not going to move against the Syracuse defense.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as our struggles offensively, a lot of that's dictated by going up against some great competition as well. They've played a non-conference schedule that's just as difficult as ours, if not even more so. So they've had a lot of players back on the offensively, 7 starters back from last year's team. Got a new quarterback. You know, they've had an injury here or there as well. I know they're not happy with the way that they're executing, but they are playing some pretty good defenses as well. On the flip side, I've been really amazed at how their defense has gone out. I mean, I think preseason, that was the group that everybody was saying, hey, that's where Holy Cross is suspect, is on the defensive side of the ball, and they've stepped up huge. I think maybe only 4 returning starters from last year's squad, and they've stepped up, and you know, even against Syracuse, they came up with some big plays and kept it, as long as they could, you know, before it became a rout at the end. There, they were doing a good job. They did an incredible job in their one victory against UNH, which is a historically a very, very strong program in the CAA. And they scored a big defensive touchdown to help them win that game 13-10. So while their offensive production, I know they're not happy with where they're at. We know they're better than their statistics show. But to me, the biggest story for them is their defense is really, I think, achieving above and beyond where I think they thought they'd be through the non-conference schedule.
In fact, against New Hampshire, they scored 10 fourth-quarter points and rallied and won that game 13-10.
Exactly.
Dave, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much. Best of luck Saturday at 2 on homecoming. Appreciate it very much.
No problem, Steve. Take care.
Dave Cicchini, head football coach at Bucknell. We'll come back, wrap up the show in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. Penn State will get ready to take on Purdue Saturday. Purdue's banged up. Penn State just has to keep going. You just have to keep going. And it is a young football team that, you know, I talk about the two lines. the experience line and the talent line. And when would those two lines intersect? Well, the two lines got closer and closer to intersecting on Friday night. Now you have to do something with it and follow that up. You have to be the football team that gets better every week. You have to be that team that gets better every week. And I think that becomes an important factor in all of this. Can you be the team that gets better every week? There are certain teams that are doing that right now across the country. For example, do you think Clemson got better on Saturday? No. Did Wisconsin get better Saturday? No. Now, did Auburn get better Saturday? Yes. I think, you know, Auburn's an interesting team. I think Auburn, to its credit, is getting a little bit better every time out. So I'm looking at, you know, so and that, I think now for Penn State, doesn't matter who you're playing, it doesn't matter who's hurt for them. You've got to go out and you've got to get better. Because as each week builds, you're playing for bigger stakes. Well, do you want to derail your stakes? By the way, they will be wearing the Generation of Greatness uniforms this week. They were wearing the white shoes at practice last night, breaking them in. It's the 100th homecoming game. The 100th homecoming game. How about that? 100 years of homecoming. What do you think about it? That's pretty cool.
Just all the great traditions that go into that weekend as well. Having the select people get to guard the Lions Shrine overnight, Friday night into Saturday morning. Just to name a few. Just to name one right off the top of my head.
I think there was the one year where I think Sue Paterno and Sandra Welch put orange paint on the thing, trying to fire everybody up. It's like, hey. That's like Joe found out, like, well, you know, he asked, and it, you know, she doesn't lie. So, <she's> not,
were they playing Syracuse that weekend?
Yes.
There you go.
Well, if you're wondering about guarding the lion, part of the genesis of it is that. But you look at, I mean, 100th homecoming game. You know, Sean's going to go to the game wearing his raccoon coat and his little pennant, trying to feel like he's back in the 40s.
Yeah, kick it old school, sure. Retro.
Right. We asked the suit about the homecoming game, and he said he wouldn't be home for a week.
Right.
It's just, I mean, he worries me.
I get concerned, too. Actually, Shikellamy homecoming is Saturday night also. That's also on Saturday this week. It's going to be a Lewisburg at Shikellamy. That is Saturday night.
Why are they playing Saturday?
I guess they wanted, what I'd heard, and I could be completely wrong on this, I'd heard just with Shikellamy, they wanted the homecoming game to stand out. They wanted it to be, like, on its own. Like, they wanted to build it up, so they wanted to make it on a Saturday night instead of a Friday.
Well, Penn State, by the way, is playing at noon on Saturday, so there's no...
Right.
There's no...
No conflict.
Conflict at all, so
yep.
That's good.
Yep, same times. Actually, I think it's a... Is it a 5... It's a 5:30 pregame and a 6 p.m. kick. Yes, 5:30 pregame, 6 p.m. kick, not 7.
Bucknell plays at 2.
That's right.
So it's a double header for the suit in one day.
That's right. It'll be Kevin Herr and Matt Catrillo on the Shikellamy call on Saturday night.
Oh.
Hmm. The chief, Dave Ritchie, will be at Air Force Navy this weekend.
Really? That's great.
Yes. Awesome for the chief. I guess when he had the opportunity to go to the game, didn't realize that Shikellamy was playing Saturday instead.
No, that's fine.
Hey, that's perfectly fine. We got her covered. We got her covered.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really great because I think it kind of, sets up Matt to be familiar with to all the Shikellamy fans just for future reference. And how often are you going to hear during the course of the week, "Oh, I got two games Saturday"? How many times are you going to hear that this week?
More than I can really want to count.
So. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, it makes him feel better. I got one. All right. So, I got one game this week. We're good. This will be the first time I've done a game on a Saturday since September 14th.
That's right. And one weekend you were out of state, up north. Last weekend you were traveling out toward Pittsburgh and down to Virginia.
Because they play Friday night, they had a bye week, play Friday night. I haven't done a Saturday game since September the 14th.
Yeah, this coming weekend will be back to your regularly scheduled schedule. Fall routine.
Yeah, I decided to get a lot of stuff out of the way because at some point I got to get back to a sense of normalcy.
But you knew it was coming. You and I talked about it off air, what you had planned out and where you were going, what certain weekend and so it's not like all this. It's not like all that hit you like a Led Zeppelin.
This is yeah. But I did all this for my kids, so it's.
Well, you're an awesome dad. You're doing dad stuff.
I don't know about that, but
work with me. I'm trying.
Thank God for their mother. Thank God for the mom. Oh. Yeah, but yeah, this will be the first time in what, 3 weeks, and the Iowa game, just in case, is. 7:30. We'll be on at 6. And, yeah. And I know many of you are asking, what about the Michigan game?
We'll find out next Monday.
Oh, just sweating
it. Let's enjoy homecoming. We'll learn more next week on that.
Yeah.
Or 6 days after that, if they put it in the 6-day window. But that's another topic for another show.
they don't usually do that till November.
Yes.
That's when they do that stuff, is in November.
It's still one too many times in November for me.
No, I know. Yeah, everybody knows how I feel about it. And I feel about that way because of the fans. I don't care. Just tell me what time I'm supposed to show up for work, and I'll be there.
You're listening to News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury. You can hear us anywhere in the world with the Sunbury Broadcasting Corporation app.